You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Around the NFL Podcast, starring the old Zeuser and Dan Zeus, also Greg and Mark.
Oh, I like that. From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. I am Dan Zeus. I am the old Zeuser. I am Tugboat. I'm the new old Blue Eyes. I'm Daddy Rich. And I'm happy to be joined by the old boss and the quiet storm.
Rare that a money drop was Dan's internal monologue for at the start of every show.
I deny nothing.
That's how he thinks
I'm annoyed now at money for agreeing to voice that. He should have had a better defense system.
To be fair, money has made it clear over the years that Mark's his favorite.
Oh, yeah.
He told us that in Indianapolis. So it's definitely Mark 1. Wes is in there in absentia, of course. Dan's in there, and I'm a distant fourth.
There's a tiered system in between the top three and you, Greg. There does seem to be a space.
I don't think there's any question that Greg's outside the medal. He's not on the podium.
I understand. He's like, yeah, K-Rich, fourth, TD. Lindsey Fulton in there, and Erica, of course, higher than that, you know, and Greg.
So, yes, yesterday was one of the biggest news shows in around the NFL history. You had the blockbuster to beat all blockbusters with Russell Wilson heading to the Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks appearing to enter a rebuild here. And we're going to get into the news and another vital figure in the history of the organization who departed yesterday after we recorded. I also want to say that as the Russell Wilson shockwaves settle into just tremors, and we're going to have Sean Michael Dugar from The Athletic on the podcast tomorrow to talk about where the Seahawks go moving forward. But do you know that every...
It's kind of like a flashpoint for the Seahawks franchise when you say...
I think it is.
You know, they really are heading in an uncertain direction.
Flashpoint.
Dan's eyes lit up so big when he realized he could sing even sooner than he expected on this show. So excited.
We are, every minute that passes, every hour that passes, every day that passes, takes us that much closer to the yet-to-be-scheduled Russell Wilson introductory press conference in Denver. I mean, that's going to be fun. Can you imagine how cheesy that press conference is going to be? It's going to be off the charts how corny that press conference is going to be.
I've been in the habit of skipping those.
Not this one.
Wholesale. This one is sort of must-see territory for at least the first 10 of 40 minutes it will go on.
He's got a lot to live up to. I remember the Peyton Manning goodbye to Indianapolis, hello to Denver, back-to-back press conferences might be the gold standard in like quarterbacks changing places. I think Russell's going to try to match that.
It's going to be fun. I think Ciara is going to be there, you would imagine. I just can't wait. There is this whole subplot that this 2022 season is going to be very Russell Wilson heavy. He's going to be out front. There's going to be revenge games. There's going to be storylines. And I believe there's going to be a good amount of unintentional comedy. In fact, I would think for that press conference, what if we did like a live stream of our reaction to the press conference? Just throwing out ideas. I'm an ideas man.
I think you are an ideas man. It's a solid one. It sounds like, again, this thing is going to go on for 45
to 50
minutes.
You know what? I've been wanting to do a Twitter Spaces with us one of these days, and I think that's the perfect time for it. I think we should – it's a good time to let our listeners know whenever that press conference is, let's do a Twitter Spaces.
Okay.
Let's bring the people in.
It would have to fall exactly in parameters where I'm not doing something or would rather not be doing something else, I should say.
All you got to do is be on your phone and watch. It should be easy.
I mean, Sessler's not involved. We're not going to be able to get him to do anything.
I just feel like we're spending a lot of time together over this week and what sounds like next week. So I'm guarding against that as well.
After your very public revelation about your feeling about the editorial side of things here, I don't imagine we'll get him for any extra work.
You know what would be a great twist to that Russell Wilson press conference is if Russell Wilson, as he's been known before, actually is the one that ends up asking a big time question like to his wife, Ciara.
So this is fun. I get to be on set with you.
Yes.
We're going to have a little fun today, huh?
Yes. So guys, the funny thing is that Russ makes me really nervous.
I do.
So yes, you do. For some reason, I don't know. I mean, I kind of know why, but I don't know. I always feel so vulnerable when I'm with you in this setting. But
well, I do know everything about you, first of all. And second of all, I'm going to make you more nervous right now. You guys want me to make her more nervous?
No, we don't.
Make her more nervous.
No, why?
Well,
what is happening?
I have a question for you.
What?
Serious question.
No, what is going on?
He's on his
knee
right now.
Can we have more babies?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be perfect. Just give me one more.
Can we have more babies? Why is everything with him connected to that? Like, I think that's his currency for I'm cool is I'm in relations with my wife, who's an extremely beautiful woman.
Sure.
I get it.
Yes.
But you don't have to be so out front about it at all times that I'm doing this with this person. Like, we get it. It's something that we're aware of.
It's
that's
assumed,
how marriage
it's already
works.
Assumed to some degree. He's a hot-blooded individual.
He can't help it. I applaud it. It's my favorite thing about Russell Wilson.
Anyway, you mentioned the Flashpoint series, which, yes, unfortunately, last week, hiatus. Unfortunately, next week, hiatus. But this week, it's back today with, yes, Baker Mayfield. The focus, the name that's on the tip of everyone's tongue right now, Tony Grossi, longtime scribe in Cleveland, will be with us in just a bit. And it should be noted that we're about to get to the news with Carson Wentz, who's the latest big name quarterback to be moved in a trade. Ricky, I believe, hit me the horns again. I believe he was the first subject of the Flashpoint series. It's about getting in front of the story,
okay,
not reacting to the story. That's what the Flashpoint's about.
Right. Looking backwards, we could have done it on any number of
anybody
quarterbacks.
Anybody can do that.
Because we are doing it on Baker, it suggests, you know, almost energy-wise, that something massive will happen with Baker Mayfield.
Ooh, that's a good one.
In the next 10
right.
to 14 days.
Maybe next week we'll be talking about his, you know, new quarterback battle that he's involved in, or the fact he was traded to Minnesota for Kirk Cousins,
right.
Mark's worst nightmare.
Or the Houston Texans for Deshaun
Or he
Watson.
Rolls out another couple dopey commercial campaigns. Like, all these things are
Lower
in play.
Octane? Oh, yeah.
Let's hit the news.
Just finding ways to just keep getting workouts in, and even on the honeymoon, just finding ways to keep getting a little rehab in and things like that.
Where were you on your honeymoon as far as rehab?
Got some workouts, eh?
Listen, we got a theme here, Carson Wentz. We get it.
Athlete's thirsty.
You're married. We get it. It's part of the deal. Carson Wentz is on the move once again. Where? To Washington, where he becomes the first quarterback in the Commanders' portion of their history. Washington have agreed to acquire Wentz in a trade with the Colts. Rap Sheet reported on Wednesday, the trade cannot be finalized until the new league year begins March 16th, but it's happening. The pending deal involves a 2022 third round pick and next year's third rounder that can convert to a second rounder based on incentives. You'll remember that the previous Wentz trade, including an incentive-based deal that turned a second round pick into a first rounder that the Colts aren't so happy about. The Eagles own that pick as a result. Anyway, NFL Network's Mike Garofolo added the trade also includes a swap of 2022 second round draft picks. The Colts now hold the number 42 overall pick. The Commanders pick at 47. ESPN had the news first. Why? So, Greg, Wentz spent just one season in Indianapolis, and the Colts end up moving on, and they are now going to be on their fifth quarterback in 5 years. But ultimately, we knew this was coming. What do you think about the Washington Commander side of this? Is this an upgrade for them?
No, it's a terrible idea. I can't believe the Colts got so much. Like, what's it going to take for this guy's sticker price to go down? The Colts have to be thrilled just with what they got today. If you look at the trade that they made last year, it was kind of a disaster, you know, when you think about how it ended. But they gave up a first-round pick for 1 year of Carson Wentz and a third, which actually doesn't sound as bad when I, like, put it out like that as I felt, because you do have to take chances. Maybe there was a chance it was going to work. I didn't expect it. It didn't. The fact that they're going to get a 3 and very possibly a 2. And oh, by the way, they got to move up 5 spots in the second round this year. I'm just stunned that there was that much of a market for him.
You did answer your own question. What? His sticker price has gone down, but not nearly as far as I think you may have expected.
I just don't think he's better than Jacoby Brissett, who's out there for free. You know, who's out there for $10 million. Or the difference between difference between him and Jacoby Brissett and Andy Dalton and whoever, even Teddy.
Taylor Heineke.
You don't have to give a pick. To me, is so minimal. To borderline, there might not be any. And I might rather have Brissett and Dalton, that giving up this quantity of picks seems crazy to me and a way for everyone to get fired in Washington.
It's total desperation. If the casual Commanders fan didn't know that Martin Mayhew was the general manager, he's on their radar now because they basically just took on a Indianapolis's headache. And the money side of it, too, because I honestly would rather have Taylor Heineke at his cost than Carson Wentz at his exorbitant cost. The move also opens up $70 million. Essentially, the Colts next week, when this thing goes down, will have $70 million in cap space and these picks this Chris Ballard picked up. The Carson Wentz acquisition, it was a total failure for the Colts.
What's your favorite type of frog?
But Ballard, you have to say, came out of this as looking about as good as possible. I mean, basically, Frank Reich is saying, we don't want this quarterback. He was in the best possible situation Carson Wentz could be in as a handoff droid to Jonathan Taylor, just keep the mistakes low. Do we trust Washington to maximize this player? Not at all.
I'm a little confused because I'm seeing this. I hear it from you, Mark. Here's an RG3 tweet from earlier today. Masterful job by GM Chris Ballard and the Colts to even get that much in return for Carson Wentz when they made it clear they didn't want him as soon as the season ended. Hey, you didn't have to make it that clear, number one. Number two, you need to get dinged for trading for the man in the first place.
Absolutely.
Okay,
they do.
Let's calm down about Ballard being some type of genius here. He was able to unload him. I agree with that. I don't like the trade for Washington. I don't think it makes them better. But at the same time, like, to say now the Colts are back in like the driver's seat. Well, guess what? They're still.
Well, who's saying they're in the driver's seat?
No,
well,
you're saying they have $70 million in cap space.
No, no, mess of a bad situation.
It was a face-saving move, and I think that Chris Ballard.
But it's not done yet.
It's not done, but I agree with what Zach Kiefer said previously, which was the Colts this season, and it's not a great look for any of them. Might have to get worse at quarterback before they get better. They are in the market for Jimmy G. That's a possibility.
All right, but that's my point exactly. So we're going to say
it's a bad QB market.
Genius move. You got rid of Wentz. You take on Jimmy G, for instance. Ian Rappaport quickly, and I thought this was notable, immediately after Schefter broke the news, Ian followed it in, said he also had this as a report, and then said now Jimmy G enters the picture. If that's the end result for the Colts, to me it just points out that, no, Chris Ballard and the Colts are not on the right track, and they will remain in purgatory. They found a sucker for Wentz. Good for them. But I still see both of these organizations kind of stuck in the muddle
right
of it.
No one called it a genius move. It's like essentially they could have gotten stuck cutting.
Well, RG3 called it a masterful job.
All right, but no one on this show did. Like you could have essentially got stuck releasing Carson Wentz if there were no takers. He got value for it. The whole idea they went down that avenue is what we argued about all last offseason, saying this is going to work or it's not. And I mean, I think it was pretty strongly on the side of this thing is not going to work, and it didn't work.
Right. I think it's less about the Colts, you know, saving face. And they did. They have to be happy just with what they got. A couple picks. It's fine. And more about Washington just making a bad decision. Like, I just think they were in on Russell Wilson. We've heard they were, you know, tiptoeing around with Deshaun Watson, but that's obviously been in a holding pattern. They reportedly offered 3 first-round picks to Russell Wilson, or for Russell Wilson, and that was shot down. It's pretty clear, because it's all Washington media reporting it, that information that they gave up 3 firsts, that, hey, we tried to get Russell Wilson, but they didn't want to trade him in the NFC, was coming from the team. I don't believe that. I believe that Russell Wilson had a no-trade clause, and there's been other reporting about that, and he made it clear which teams he would go to and which teams he wouldn't. He had total control. He got that in his contract. Good job by him. He had total control over where he was going to go. There was another report, it hasn't really been confirmed by the big guys, that Philadelphia was snooping around on Russell Wilson too, but he wanted Denver. He thought Denver was the right fit. I think Washington, in the last 2 off seasons, has paid for the last 2 decades of mismanagement in terms of Matthew Stafford and Russell Wilson. Ultimately, were 2 big-time quarterbacks that didn't want to go there. And I think that was a factor in the fact that they didn't get him. And I think they were so determined that we got to get a quarterback. We got to get a quarterback with upside, that they went for this Carson Wentz move, and they convinced themselves it's somehow better than Andy Dalton or Jacoby Brissett or Teddy or Jameis or whoever. And I just don't think he is. I really don't. If you look at his, like, people have thrown out, hey, he was a top 5 quarterback in certain numbers. Last year, even when it was going well, not a top 20 PFF guy, which matters more to me, not a top 20 guy in yards per attempt. Like, you can have a good touchdown to interception ratio in Indianapolis. Jacoby Brissett was 18-4 in Indianapolis under Frank Reich. Philip Rivers had amazing stats. I don't know. It makes no sense to me. I don't think he can play that well.
Well, the TD to ratio thing, I mean, now everyone is dismissing that and throwing it out like it also doesn't matter.
I don't want to get a sidetrack, but Philip Rivers did not have amazing stats with the Colts.
My point is, though, like, he had significantly better stats than Carson Wentz.
I can't let that go
unchecked. My point is, it's like a QB stat factory. And so his, like, raw TD to interception ratio in a good situation doesn't tell me much. He wasn't playing that well if you watched him game
Mark,
to game.
Go ahead.
No, the one upgrade, though, that I would see with Jimmy G is this is the second team in a row where the optics for Carson Wentz, locker room-wise, don't look great. They just don't. I think he annoyed them, obviously, by not getting vaccinated this past season as the quarterback. There have been a couple of those situations. But Jimmy G, at least, is beloved by teammates. Like, there's no question that elongated his run last season inside that locker room and on the field for them. I just think that's something that the Colts are trying to tell you. It's like, if Frank Reich, who is the best possible tutor for Carson Wentz, is saying, we're giving this guy away, that another team came and chased him down and gave value for him is stunning to me. And it tells me that Washington, for all the kudos last year for the, you know, Ron Rivera's changing the culture and all this, part of it is making smart moves. And they took on a ton of money for a quarterback with a ton of question marks.
And the money doesn't even bother me that much. He's making $22 million. That was one of the nice things for the Colts. There's no dead cap. All the guarantees have been paid out. It's just a year-to-year contract around $20 to $22 million, which is not that much for a guy who will be your starter. It's just like, he's not that good. And they could all be gone next year if this goes poorly. I think people missed how truly bad the Washington football team was last year. Now they're the Commanders, but they were a very lucky 7-10. They were 27th in defensive DVOA with Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera. I know they had a lot of injuries, but their defense, which is supposed to be their bread and butter, went backwards, and now you have Carson Wentz. I feel bad for Scott Turner, who I think is a good offensive play caller and just has been in tough situations, and I feel bad for Terry McLaurin, and I feel bad for us if they put them in primetime a lot. You know that Eagles game will be in primetime.
Because it's the NFC East.
My kind of overarching viewpoint on this, yes,
Carson Wentz dunking is a social media pastime for everybody that follows the sport. That's fine. He failed ultimately in Indianapolis, although I don't think he was the total failure. Now that he looks like, in hindsight, there were definitely some highs mixed in with the lows. But for Washington, this isn't any franchise burying move for them. They gave away some mid-round picks, which they didn't have to do. They took on the money, but they can get out of the deal if he stinks this year. They will fire everybody, could get people fired. But if you're a Washington fan that's annoyed by this deal, and I get it, your team probably wasn't a Super Bowl team to start with this year. He becomes, to me, kind of like a bridge guy, like your version of Jared Goff. And when and if it doesn't work out, you get rid of him and you start over with a better draft class next year.
Yeah, but you don't have that third and you don't have
two. But I'm just saying, we're not losing first-round picks.
But that's a rosy view of it, though.
That's what bad organizations
reality,
do.
I think. It's not something that's going to sink their organization for years to come. It's just a shaky personnel move that will affect them in the short term.
Right, but it's also the type of process that they've been in, making bad decisions.
I agree with that. They're as mediocre as any organization can get. They're stuck in the mud. They are just like, they exist. And if they think that this move is going to change that, it's simply not.
I'd rather see them take a quarterback at number 11. And I don't think this should stop them from doing anything like that.
And I don't think it will. I don't think it'll change their quarterback.
But don't reach for a quarterback this year in a bad draft.
They probably
end up with a Dwayne Haskins again that sets you back 4 more years. Like,
well, that killed him too.
Do it right. If you don't like this crop of quarterbacks coming in, then go ahead and wait out this year with Carson Wentz and then dive in hard next year.
I think the hardest thing for a Commanders fan or fanatic is like when you suddenly
My favorite subplot of the pod now is every time you say Commanders.
Well, it doesn't sound right. I sent WFT in a tweet yesterday. I just haven't even gotten used to saying it or saying
it. I'm with
it
you. It's the newness of it. But I mean, you don't trust your front office anymore. And I mean, there was some hope there. There is talent on offense. There is talent on defense. But even to your point, last season, they were just not a very good team. The year before, go look at the quarterbacks that they beat to win that horrible NFC East. I mean, on the whole, Ron Rivera is overseeing a mediocre offering.
I think everybody's gone next year.
Get a new stadium.
Reset again.
There's a lot going on. Washington fans, the ones that have stuck around, are diehards. And they deserve better. And it's just hard to get excited. I truly believe that there's no difference between him and a Tyrod or a Jacoby Brissett or those guys that are just sort of like, they're not really starters.
Taylor Heinicke.
That's Taylor Heinicke. I put him maybe a little lower than those guys.
I think Taylor Heinicke probably is someone that was loved in that locker room. And I think Carson Wentz brings all sorts of questions on that front. I don't like that in a quarterback.
All right, let's pause right here and take a break. We'll be right back.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all. But I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, moving on. The Russell Wilson era ended in Seattle, of course, on Tuesday, but that wasn't the only other era. There's only one other player that was on the team at going into yesterday morning that was a member of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seahawks. It was Bobby Wagner. Both players were taken in the second round of that year's draft. And now, or the year before his draft, now they're both gone. Bobby Wagner, released by the Seahawks, spent 10 years in Seattle, started 150 games, six-time All-Pro. The man is on a Hall of Fame track. And the Seahawks, I think, obviously are revealing here that they are a team, obviously very much in transition, but once you get rid of Wilson and Wagner on the same day, mm-hmm. to boot, you start to wonder what their intentions are. Are they tearing the whole thing down and starting from scratch? That's what I took out of this one, Greg.
I understand that, but I also think Pete Carroll's too old and not wired for rebuilding. And they had to take a lot of dead money to get rid of Russell Wilson, which is just unfortunate for them. He's still $26 million on their cap. But Wagner was in a situation coming into this offseason that it really looked like there was a good chance he was going to get cut no matter what. And he can still play. He's still an above average, good middle linebacker who I think a lot of teams will be interested in because of everything he brings, leadership, smarts, and all that. But he had a $20 million cap number, which is just wild for an off-ball linebacker. And they're basically saving all that money. We're hearing reports that they're already in on Deshaun Watson. I think they're going to be in the quarterback market in general and in the free agent market. I think they're going to try to rebuild this thing, and it really wouldn't surprise me if Deshaun Watson ends up being their quarterback this year, and Wagner at $20 million just didn't make a lot of sense for them, even though I think he'll make sense for some teams out there.
Yeah, he saves them also almost $17 million by moving him. I kind of get it. I think that they're rebuilding off of the end of an era. I mean, this is the third or fourth iteration of a Pete Carroll squad at this point, but they're going to look different. I think if you go and get Deshaun Watson, I mean, there is you've solved a lot of issues there, 100%. I mean, as for Bobby Wagner, I mean,
it'd be depressing, though, for a lot of Seahawks fans, well, I think.
It would be, but I think right now is extremely depressing because there's no answer at that point. But I wonder if the Cowboys might be a landing spot for Bobby Wagner, because Dan Quinn basically has called him like the best defensive player he's ever coached, and you could see him matched with Micah Parsons. And I also wonder if Tyler Lockett could be the next person to go in Seattle if this is a deeper rebuild than we think.
Why would you get rid of Tyler Lockett?
They're getting rid of great players.
Wagner made sense.
I'm no John Idzik here, capologist, but if the Cowboys can't even figure out how to pay their own guys right now, Wagner might be a tough sell. But again, sometimes with the salary cap, it doesn't make sense. And then all of a sudden you hear it like, oh, okay, maybe it is. But that is a very Dallas Cowboys move. It will be interesting. With the Watson thing, Seattle under Carroll and Schneider definitely have a track record of taking in guys with checkered past and saying, we're going to look past that, or we're going to work with the player and we know he's talented. Watson at the same time isn't a dude that got a DUI arrest or a guy that failed a drug test. Like, there is more to the Watson story. And, you know, where we stand right now, by the way, let's touch on it quickly, is his criminal sexual misconduct case will be presented to a grand jury on Friday. 10 women filed criminal complaints, not civil, criminal complaints against Watson, with three alleging sexual assault or attempted sexual assault. So we'll find out that, you know, it's the Houston DA will present this to a grand jury. The grand jury will come back and decide whether the case will move forward. And if it does, he is very much in limbo right now from a legal standpoint, a man who could be facing prison. So saying that the Seahawks will go get Watson and everything will move forward, that's certainly possible. But it's also, he still might be Watson, a guy that just can't move because people don't know where he's going to be.
There is sort of bonus money and other stuff that's coming his way sooner than later. If the Texans wanted to say and matched with another team that understood there could be a long delay until Watson's available, I still think there's interest out there.
But
it's just depressing. He also could be suspended.
I think we all agree that it's depressing.
No, I just
mean,
if you're a fan, I think it's because I listened to Mina Kimes' pod, and she was just like, I might be out after that. Like, losing Russell Wilson and Wagner in one day, and you bring in Watson next week.
Mina
just like,
would be in the minority, I think, overall, though. I know that's depressing to you, too, but there will be a lot of Seahawks fans that would be pumped about Deshaun Watson coming into town as well.
We'll see with Watson. It could take a long time, too. I think teams are going to want to know how long he's suspended for. That could take the whole offseason for all we know. Or it could be in next week. We really don't know. I thought it was somehow fitting, though. Wagner and Russell Wilson come in on the same day. They change the organization as much as two players possibly can. Pete Carroll started the process a year before, but one of the best rebuilding jobs in the history of the NFL, the best couple of drafts, of the 2010s. And suddenly they're winning the Super Bowl and then they're losing a heartbreaker the next year. But it somehow was fitting on the day Wilson gets traded. Wagner sends out this tweet, Sherm a prophet. And he was talking about Sherman. I think Richard Sherman said he thought Russell Wilson was going to get dealt this year, this offseason. He wasn't exactly dunking on Russell Wilson, but you're not exactly not dunking on him there. And then he retweets Sherman, who had this quote, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And there was this weird thing with this Seahawks run. There was a ton of drama the whole time. I mean, the days before their biggest glory, their biggest moment, Golden Tate and Percy Harvin are getting literally in a fist fight, and he's got a black eye in the Super Bowl picture, and then they go out and win 43-8. The next year, they lose that Patriots game, and pretty much since, you've heard a lot of defensive players who maybe weren't the biggest fans of Russell Wilson, and there was just a lot of tension and drama, even though it was this great era in Seahawks history of not everyone exactly getting along, and this is kind of the exclamation point of how it all ends.
That will be a good thing to talk to Sean Michael Dugar about, who covers the Seahawks so well, tomorrow. But I will know, because I know you were tracking this all season, Greg, in almost a maniacal way, the DK Metcalf didn't seem to enjoy being Russell Wilson's teammate. I just went to his Twitter just to check in on it. He had no tweets, but he had a retweet of NFL Game Day celebrating Bobby Wagner's career. Not a single reference to the only quarterback he's ever played with.
I didn't see almost anything on Twitter from anyone.
It's
almost
funny,
devoid
Wentz,
of like
Wentz
the
and Wilson
crescendo
seem to be obviously different people, different careers and all that. But guys that are not loved necessarily by their team.
The coaches, right, in front office, too, who ended up making that decision in Seattle. I do think that was all part of the factor. Sometimes relationships just run their course.
Absolutely. All right. In other news, the Titans doing business. Get Gravedigger on the mic on this one. They re-signed outside linebacker Harold Landry to a 5-year, $87.5 million contract. $52.5 million guaranteed. Still 25 years old. Turns 26 this year. Had not been tagged, leading to some questions. But, hey, don't worry about it. After 12.5 sacks last season, they're hoping for more from the former second-round pick. Gravedigger, your thoughts on a big, fat extension for a core player of your defense?
I think it's a great move for the Titans. I think it's a great move for the Titans. Lock up Harold Landry. Keep that front four intact. One of the best front fours in football last season. And Landry may not be a great player. He's definitely not an elite pass rusher in terms of winning one-on-one against offensive tackles. But he does so much for the Titans defense specifically that I think replacing him would have been difficult. The contract works out to $17.5 million per year, Ooh. So kind of high, but it's not Bosa range, it's not Watt range, it's not $28 million a year, it's, $10 million less than that. And Harold Landry actually leads all edge defenders with 346 coverage snaps since the start of 2019, so...
Give me that data!
Versatile player for the Titans defense, I think it's a good move.
He's been really durable, too. 950 plus snaps, 3 years running. I mean, you're right. He fits what they do. They've got Jeffrey Simmons. Forget it. I'm over it.
What? Go on. You're making a good point.
I'm good. I'm done.
Your point was so good that you agreed with yourself.
I'm good. You got to probably extend Jeffrey Simmons at some point. A.J. Brown as well. There's more business to do.
Little extension for Tyer Tart, too, who wasn't really a unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, ERFA.
They are... They're old school. He's old school. He plays 1,000 snaps per game. They're just, I mean, per season. Like, there are very few edge defenders who do that. I think all of the Patriots-type teams were going to be ready to pay Harold Landry a lot of money because he would fit on those, like, 80s Giants defenses. There just aren't many guys like that that you can keep out there that can do everything for 1,000 snaps. Bobby Wagner, who we just spoke about, coincidentally, is one of those guys, too. He's one of the only off-ball linebackers that can play 1,000 snaps and not kill you in coverage. So I think it's a sign guys are going to get crazy money. Between this contract and the Mike Williams contract, the free agent contracts are going to be enormous because these have kind of been next level big for these types of players.
Digger, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, Digger.
You have teams like contenders in the AFC, like the Colts, fringy contenders like the Browns getting flashpoint focuses. Mm-hmm. You have the Broncos pulling off a huge trade. And then you have the Titans, again, always just beneath the surface with their quarterback coming off a hideous playoff performance. Do you think to yourself when you see something like what the Broncos did, as a Titans fan, you're like, am I cool with how down low we are and entrenched with our QB situation? Or would this have been a window for us to try to make some noise?
I think I am cool personally. There's a lot of Titans fans yesterday.
I think you are too.
Is this a flashpoint on the Titans? Right here, we're doing a flashpoint.
We're not the only ones.
Justin Graver.
The ladies of Los Angeles agree. Very cool.
Go ahead, Justin.
No, I think there was people saying the Titans 2022 season is over yesterday, or one.
Wait, what? Why?
Because they weren't the ones to get Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson. Like, give me a break on that.
But that never. What I guess my point was, you haven't heard anything about the Titans thinking about should we try to get back. I'm not saying
there
they should.
There were little whispers about Rodgers in Tennessee.
Mike Florio had said that there was a deal in place with the Titans, the Steelers, and one other team. I can't remember for Green Bay. Oh, Denver. For Rodgers, and obviously I don't think that was really necessarily true. I'm not saying anyone's a liar, but maybe some misreports fed to him there. I think John Robinson and Mike Vrabel made it pretty clear recently that they are sticking with Ryan Tannehill for at least one more season. His contract kind of forces them to, unless they could find a trade partner. But then, like, who do you replace him with if Aaron Rodgers is not an option? So he led the Titans to the number one seed last year with tons of injuries. His playoff performance was brutal, but I think you have to run it back with him one more time and just see if, you know, you can add a couple more weapons to the offense, someone who can take the top off the defense and see what happens.
I mean, he fits them too. He's a nasty, like,
how,
I think they love him inside the locker
room. How close is Ryan Tannehill to the Dalton line?
He was the replacement for Andy Dalton
when he was in Miami.
We called
him the Tana scale, but it was a good sign that he was doing that with Adam Gase as his coach. He's actually that you have to adjust for Gasiness. I just would be a little worried as a Titans fan that John Robinson crying at the combine was kind of the main story of your offseason. That's pretty much the most attention the Titans
it's
are going
to
get.
It's okay to be emotional as a
man. I liked it. I thought that was evolved.
This is not 1950 anymore. It's not. Everybody doesn't have to be John Wayne.
I'll cry at anything.
I know,
any
you have all people calling him out.
I'm not calling him out. I'm saying that is the most attention.
The most notable thing that has happened.
The Titans don't get a lot of juice nationally. That got some juice nationally. No, I was balling on the way to Indianapolis. I watched this Oscar short called Audible. It's about football, so it's related. It's about a school for the deaf's football team. It's 38 minutes on Netflix, and it is incredible filmmaking. People should watch it. It's great.
That's good. You know, I saw your tweet, and I enjoyed
it. Just reminded me, the crying reminded
the emotional
me.
Honesty of your tweet really jumped out to me to the point where I was going to end the week by maybe us doing our latest share of pop culture things that jump out to us. But there you go. You popped it out there. I'll say you guys, everybody's got to check out Gang of Youths. That's an artist out of Australia. Maybe our Australian listeners are aware. Graver, you know them?
No.
Oh, man, I'm way in on this band. They're my new favorite band. I went out, me and Bob of Throwback Podcast fame, went out and got concert tickets. They're coming to L.A. Just keep an eye out for Gang of Youths. Mark, you're up.
I like the idea of Gang of Youths. I will listen to them. I have started watching that Winning Time, the Lakers deep dive, which I was a little suspicious of going in. and found it quite enjoyable. There's, so there is a thing, though. There's an element. Adam McKay directed it, and they use like the break the fourth wall thing. I like it.
Oh,
it
not was, that. I thought you meant the aesthetic of it, making it feel like it's gritty early 80s, the visual
of it. They
do
a great job with that. And I think if you were, you know, if a lot of us became NBA fans back during that time, it is there's a lot added because of that. But they do this break the fourth wall thing maybe 27 too many times in the first episode.
Yeah, a little gimmicky.
Yeah.
It really worked in The Big Short, and now it's become like his go-to thing. It's like,
his dial-up.
Bro, I'm not in the industry. I'm not an auteur, but maybe bring it down a notch with the fourth wall breakage.
Just a notch.
All right. That said, let's move on. Greg definitely wanted to talk about Eric Fisher, so let's clear the runway.
Well,
for
I
Rosenthal.
Made this little news rundown before Wentz and before some other news dropped. Sure.
Hey, but it's already been brought up, so now it's out there. Go ahead, buddy.
When you think about the Colts, it's like, oh, this great offensive line, which is like good, but I wouldn't say it was otherworldly last year. But they don't have a left tackle. Eric Fisher's not expected to be re-signed. They don't have their right guard, Mark Glowinski, who's probably the weakest point. So there's a lot going on with the Colts. They don't have a lot of weapons. They don't have a great-looking pass rush. It's Ballard time. He's got to fix some things. I think they're going to be extremely aggressive in the next month.
They have no tight end right now.
Mark mentioned...
Oh, yeah. Doyle retired. Allie Cox is a
wide receiver's rough. QB's a nightmare.
Mark mentioned Zach Kiefer earlier, and Zach brought up the point in our first flash point that the Colts have really good players at the quote-unquote non-premium positions. And that's a little bit of an issue. They have these holes at what are deemed to be the most important positions in the league, left tackle, quarterback, wide receiver one among them. And that needs to be addressed. All right. Finally, I swear to God on this. I don't know what's going on. I have no idea. I woke up this morning. Whatever happened to Gary Cooper? I woke up this morning and I just refreshed it and it's still there. I don't know how this is possible. On ESPN.com, the top headline on their NFL page. Now, I understand the main, what do they call it? The homepage or the, what do they call it? Give me some jargon for the industry.
Homepage, vertical.
The vertical is Carson Wentz now. Good. Colts trading QB Wentz to Commanders. But on the right bar, the top headline remains, sources, Giants likely to make a run at QB Trubisky. How has this been the number one headline for 7 hours on ESPN.com? What am I missing about this Mitch Trubisky fascination that everyone in the national media seems to have about his pending free agency? Like, okay, I get it. Brian Daboll brought him in as a backup under Josh Allen, and now Brian Dable's like coach of the Giants. But even before the Giants were directly connected, there's been way too much Mitch Trubisky talk in football circles, and I demand to know what's going on because it's starting to feel like something bigger that I haven't been able to grasp.
On the ESPN angle, you're annoyed at their version of David Ely for still having that sitting there hoisted above every
but
other
even
transaction.
Everywhere.
I mean, this all bubbled up at the Combine, and I'm with you. I was out on Mitch Trubisky about six games into his career. I've never gotten back on board, but suddenly all these front office figures are entranced by his potential again. Slow down with that.
Okay, I've got a couple of good theories. I got one theory again, which I mentioned last week's too hot for the air. But I have another theory. Is that like he's doing numbers?
We have a whole other show that has all the theories that are too hot for air. That's a way better podcast than this one.
I kind of wish you would share that theory. Yeah. But
I bet he does numbers. He's like the Terrell Pryor of 2022. I've told this story on
does
the podcast,
numbers?
But it's been about 6 years.
Like
since,
Calvin Ridley
since
does numbers?
I told it. Like when I was... the Around the NFL editor and working on the Stack Sorter. Any Terrell Pryor story just did great numbers.
Metrics, yeah.
It could just be, didn't matter what it was about, Terrell Pryor. And I bet maybe Trubisky because he crosses a few different lines and Bears fans, who
and
knows?
And the Giants.
Who knows, the Giants.
And it's just working. Pick.
But the part that was really rich for me in this Trubisky reporting was, well, he could be going to the Giants. They really want him, but they might not be able to afford him. What? What is going on?
I don't know.
He's got a great agent,
I'm
clearly,
you,
but this is ridiculous.
Now I understand what you're saying initially, because, for instance, as an example on a different platform, the Around the NFL broadcast on NFL Network does a big number. Every time we're on the air, that show, whether it's 1 hour or two, and Ricky could back this up with data if it's asked for, but you don't have to, just trust us. We do huge number. I mean, it's just
some people say an astronomical number.
I mean, carrying the network to some degree, reportedly.
Right. So you're saying Trubisky does a huge number in a stack.
That's a guess. But if it's staying that high in the stack, it's a metrics business.
Right.
And that's likely part
of the equation. Like, put us on at 4 in the morning. Give us one commercial a week.
Little Tebow. Like, Tebow was, of course, a big driver.
I think Dan and Mark know about that adventure.
Right. Like, we'll give you a giant number on television. We don't need the time slot. We don't need the promotion.
It's a sound argument.
He didn't even make my top 100. It kind of gets to my point about why you don't trade for Carson Wentz, because I am not a Trubisky fan, but he's in that mix of all these guys that I just mentioned, Dalton and Tyrod and Jacoby Brissett and all these guys. Like, they're all about they're not a huge difference from Wentz.
Well, the other aspect to it is they're saying that he's being brought in with the intention to push Daniel Jones, and that if he outshined him in the lead up to the season.
Well, he was with Dable, so
he knows
Mariota's
the system.
Out there too, Case Keenum. It's like,
what does it mean?
It does tell you that the Giants, unlike with Eli Manning, aren't forcing quietly ownership, the coaching staff, to go with Daniel Jones no matter what, if they found a better solution.
Right. But if
this isn't
Trubisky,
the better solution.
If Trubisky is your solution and he's going to have an actual camp battle, that tells you a lot about
Wait, and Schefter just released a podcast, which is, you know, embedded within this article about Trubisky, that's got Trubisky in the headline. Like, that's his lead, covering
Sums
all
up.
The headlines
There's
featuring
Mitch
Trubisky.
Here.
I think he's even getting interviewed. What is going on right now?
Very high Q
There's
rating.
There's a Kabbalah right now. I don't know what's happening.
Kabbalah?
Cabal? Cabal. Cabal.
A cabal.
Trubisky cabal.
Where is... well, we got to take a break in a second because Tony Grossi is about to join us. The Flashpoint series is going off with episode 2.
It's a pro-Trubisky cabal. Never used that word before out loud, and it didn't go well.
I want to see where did Wentz come down on Rosenthal's QB index end of season? Just out of curiosity.
I mean, we did add backups to the mix with the very last one. Like, if you started any game, which kind of made it a little wonky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because there was a couple backups that were interesting. He was 19th. Right next to Teddy.
Let me guess, Teddy's ahead of him, though.
Teddy's one spot ahead.
Of course.
Right next to Teddy and Jimmy G. Right once.
Teddy could be the Colts quarterback.
Tua, Jared Goff, Jones.
All right.
Who was number 25 on that list? A little tough to admit right now. He's coming up on the show.
Oh, tease it.
I know
it
is.
Flashpoint Focus.
Tease it. All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Flashpoint series continues with Baker Mayfield.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Craig doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by 3-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, Love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top
not
of it.
Like that. See that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because he didn't need it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Flashpoint. Flashpoint.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
The Flashpoint series is back. Focus again.
Whose voice was that?
Don't worry about it. Focusing in on, of course, it's Lassen.
Okay.
Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. And to help us navigate this murky time in Browns history, we welcome in a man who knows his Cleveland sports. Tony Grossi, Browns and NFL analyst for thelandondemand.com, 850 ESPN Cleveland, Bally Sports Great Lakes. And now he joins us on Around the NFL. Tony, what's up?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
How do you feel, Tony, just as a longtime Browns scribe? We've got a big Browns fan here in Mark. Like, your tweets and your reports over the years have been heroic, really, for Mark. Like, you are someone that he looks up to.
That's accurate.
Well, the good news is Mark has not been blocked by me. one of the few, I guess. I have the longest block list, I think, around. But no, I know Mark, and we've enjoyed each other's company over the years.
I try to stay civil with you, and I know that, you know, there's a lot of, this should be giving you hazard pay for what you've done over the years covering this team. He's called it a 100 years war in Cleveland, and you've seen many of those years, and that's accurate.
Well, let's start with this, where we're at right now in the war with the Browns, because obviously, we know the backstory here. Baker's number one overall pick in 2018. He has a great rookie year. Things kind of crescendo a season ago, or now, I guess, 2 seasons ago with that playoff run. Big win in Pittsburgh. Nearly knock off the Chiefs. And then, obviously, the disappointment of last year. Now, Tony, with Baker, a day after we see Russell Wilson come to the AFC, and Cleveland's window as a Super Bowl contender hypothetically still open, but where do you stand on where they are with their quarterback right now, and if they have real options now and going forward?
Well, the options are dwindling by the day, it seems. And the Browns' narrative from the first day of the offseason, a day or two after the last game, has been that they expect to run it back with Baker Mayfield. Heal him up. He had the surgery on his left shoulder in the middle of late January. And that narrative continued at the combine, which was our next availability with the general manager, Andrew Berry, and coach Kevin Stefanski. And sure enough, there's no real evidence that they're poking around to either challenge Baker with a new number two, or certainly not to replace it. So at some point, I'm going to take their word for it. I know everybody in Seattle who took Pete Carroll's word that they had no intention of trading Russell Wilson, you know, should learn from that. But there's no other evidence here that the Browns are going to go against their word. And I guess they met with Baker's representation at the combine and pretty much said the same thing face-to-face to them.
Well, that said, I mean, he is the rare example of a quarterback on his fifth-year option who heads into this offseason, into next season, with no extension. I mean, obviously, it's one of the tougher quarterbacks to evaluate because it's been this sort of hot and cold act, depending on where he's been and where the team's been. I just wonder, though, my one question with Baker and the players around him, I think that the OBJ thing, obviously, I think created a wound and a scar inside that locker room, and you've got a whole new wide receiver group. But in general, like Andy Janovich, for instance, like in an article that came out today by Tyler Dunn, just praised Baker the person. And where do you think the locker room is with Baker Mayfield? Are they all sold totally that he is the quarterback, or did the OBJ fallout create, I don't know, an air of skepticism that can really be invasive, I think, for any kind of team?
Well, that's a great point, Mark, that I think is very underplayed nationally.
That means a lot to Mark to hear that from you.
Thank you,
great
Greg,
point.
For
he will be
that.
Replaying that clip over and over.
But it's real. I think you know, Baker is such a polarizing quarterback externally. You know, fans either love him or hate him. And I think he's this year became polarizing in the locker room. I don't know what the ratio is, though. We know OBJ and his dad really threw him under the bus, and everybody on the team saw the same thing that they see every Monday when they reviewed the film of the previous day's game, right? Odell streaking open, or other receivers streaking open, or and Baker unable to deliver the ball on target. But then you have this unique relationship with Jarvis Landry, who was I call him soulmate with Odell. So you got your top two receivers now that seemingly turned against Baker. Then as OBJ went through his Super Bowl run, you would get a number of Browns on social media just, you know, falling over backwards to congratulate and express love. And it became almost like an indictment of Baker, you know, because everyone knew the relationship there. Furthermore, Baker on two occasions down the stretch of the last season spoke in national interviews about there's no manual for what I'm going through. He talked of repairing relationships inside the building. And I think that's what he was referring to, is that some of the players lost confidence in him, let's say, lost trust in him. So that's to me, it was as much a part of Baker's demise as his shoulder injury, his left shoulder injury. And, you know, you could repair the shoulder. Can you repair those relationships totally? Well, it looks like the strategy of doing that might be to just replace the entire wide receiver core with new people.
Right. There's an expectation that Jarvis Landry could be an ex-Brown. That hasn't happened yet, obviously. Where do you think his relationship with Kevin Stefanski is, and the confidence of Stefanski in Mayfield? Because one of your longtime colleagues, Mary Kay Cabot, had reported a couple times that Mayfield was frustrated with Stefanski's play calling. And that came at a particular point in the season that when I saw that report in the public, I just thought, oh, man, this makes me think a divorce is going to happen this offseason, that was coming out in the media, because that's ugly if your quarterback is quietly, or people around him are criticizing the play calling.
Yeah, I don't think it's to that extent that it would be the reason for a divorce, but clearly there was frustration there from Baker's end, and, you know, overly conservative play called lack of trust from the coach in key situations. And go back to a Chargers game where it was a great game and Baker was still playing well at that time, I think week four or something like that. And there was a key moment where they had a 3rd and 14 and they handed off to Kareem Hunt. He gained like 7 or 8 yards, but they had to punt, and it led to Justin Herbert taking over and really winning the game. That stung Baker, that you know, lack of faith or confidence in the coach. Let's face it, in 2 years, Stefanski has tried to reinvent Baker Mayfield's game, you know, under center more, to try to keep him in the pocket, because he's got to win the pocket to create those play fakes and those play action and bootlegs that are so central to Stefanski's game. If teams take away those, and Stefanski talked about this at the combine, he didn't blame it on the shoulder injury. He attributed it to teams taking it away. And so, okay, so how do you work around that? Well, you've got to win from the pocket. The quarterback's got to make plays from the pocket, and then that lessens, and then you can use the other stuff. So I think there is some friction there. You know, Baker's a gunslinger, right, in college. He's not a gunslinger in Stefanski's offense. And I think that is the heart of, you know, what rankles him.
So, again, like turning now back to the QB landscape of right now, Aaron Rodgers, obviously not an option. Russell Wilson, no longer an option. Kyler Murray's another big name that's out there, but it feels like the most likely scenario is maybe at least one more rocky year in Arizona, but who knows? But then there's the one guy that kind of hangs over everything, which is Deshaun Watson, and we know the knotty issue around the Houston quarterback. Is in your dealings with Stefanski, with Andrew Berry, is Deshaun Watson a guy that could potentially be laying in the weeds here with the Browns?
I don't think so. First of all, you know, would Deshaun Watson waive his no trade to play in Cleveland? That let's forget about that issue. That's a real issue, though, in Houston trying to trade him, right? But other than that, you know, the Browns, all they needed to do was hand in the card, and they could have had a Deshaun Watson as a rookie coming out of the draft with the number 12 pick in that draft, which they traded to Houston. And Andrew Berry was part of that regime at that time. He didn't have GM power or authority, but he was around. So he knows what Paul DePodesta and at the time Sashi Braun thought of Deshaun Watson. And maybe he shared that opinion, maybe not. But I don't think they're up for such a dramatic and costly acquisition.
Andrew Berry is in a tough spot because if the NFL quarterback pay structure were a little bit more negotiable, Baker Mayfield would fit in a different tier than what we're seeing some of these other guys making. And so it's a tough evaluation. And, you know, he was drafted partly by Scott McLuhan, who loved Baker and kind of saw a little bit of Brett Favre in him. Do you think this front office innately believes in Baker? I mean, they inherited him. That's tough in its own. Do they believe in him? And what kind of season, what does Baker Mayfield need to do to get an extension? Because it seems like it's not just numbers. It's not just X, Y, and Z. It feels like playoffs are bust to some degree. And the Baker Mayfield experience needs to be highly positive for them to do anything but move on.
Yeah, I thought Andrew Berry showed remarkable restraint after Baker's really good season in 2020, you know, the second half of that season, in not extending him. I was one of the guys locally. I've had my battles with Baker, and I felt he had proved enough to merit it, the extension after that year. But Andrew Berry didn't, and he was totally healthy there and coming off a winning season and doing something no Browns quarterback had done since 1969, win a playoff game on the road. So all of the evidence was all of the argument was there to extend them then, and they didn't. So I can't see them extending them now with so much doubt now. Do they believe in them? I think they obviously do because they haven't replaced them, but I think it's not as strong as it was a year ago. They expected Baker to improve in the second year under Kevin Stefanski, and he regressed. Now, they have to determine how much the injury had to do with that. They've delivered mixed messages publicly about that injury, saying it had nothing to do with, you know, he practiced prior to games. He looked fine. He was unencumbered in practice. And that's not the reason he couldn't roll out and all that. And yet, as soon as the season ended, they start saying, we got to get him healthy and hope he comes back. So the messages are mixed there. I don't believe during the season they attributed the injuries to his downward play. Maybe on second thought, they do a little bit more.
Tony Grossi, thank you so much for joining us and shining a light on this situation. It's still very murky, but there's only so much that we can know right now. But it appears that the Browns will...
He's not running under an American flag or getting trapped under one like Brandon Weeden. There are some things we like about him a little more.
You've gotten used to now different sorts of problems as an NFL fan. It's like when you're at the bottom, you're just like, oh, I would kill for like a mid-level quarterback that brings me to the middle. But then once you're in the middle with the quarterback and as a team, you're like, actually, this is a weird spot to be too.
Right, and then if you ended up with Kirk Cousins, you'd be like, oh, man, his stats are good, but I want to win playoff games.
Well, just remember this, too. All those great quarterbacks now in the AFC, Mahomes, Burrow, Russell Wilson, Herbert, none of them has a statue of himself in front of his college stadium like Baker will have in April.
Ooh,
so he's
that's
got
fair
that
point.
On all of them.
Well, Lamar does, I think, doesn't he? But hey,
Lamar Jackson does at Louisville.
I don't know. RG3 does at Baylor, but you know that. Listen, it's a small crew, and thank you so much, Tony. We appreciate it, and good luck in the upcoming season and everything else.
Thanks,
Tony. Thanks.
We need it. Thank you.
There he goes. That's a local legend on the Cleveland beat. And you know what? What Tony said, and Mark, we talked about it in the newsroom today because I'm writing an article for the .com on best case, worst case, most likely scenario for quarterbacks in some state of limbo. Like with Baker, we know he's not getting an extension this year, but he's probably not getting replaced either. And it just feels like the Browns are kind of just in the middle, and I'm not against them for doing this because I understand why they're kind of caught in the middle, but it is interesting to me and perhaps instructive that what Tony said about they came off Baker having a great second half in 2020, winning a playoff game, nearly knocking off the Chiefs, and they still didn't pay him.
They didn't even like start the process either.
No chatter of it.
Well, makes you think that there's always been some doubts, and last year just built on it, and now it's kind of like we don't want to get out, but we also kind of like, you could kind of see where this is heading.
Yeah, I mean they're not that different. Looking at what Baker Mayfield gave you last year, for instance, then the Colts, in the sense that like you could have maybe done, there's a lot of chatter of you go lateral move where you go get a Jimmy G instead of Baker Mayfield and you still have a ton of problems. I think they're just sort of sitting pat and they're going to let this thing play out for one more year. I will give Baker Mayfield one little bit of credit because we're not getting, for everyone who thinks that he's this drama magnet left and right, I mean, he's not going Kyler Murray on the Browns. He's been totally quiet about it. I think it's got to be humbling that there's no extension talk, but I don't see a Browns team, and based on exactly what he said about Andrew Berry last offseason, that is going to fall for paying an extension at this point, because I don't know where that money, what would that money be, first of all?
The best case scenario for your thing, to me, for the Browns is like Baker has another one of those good Baker years and he gets tagged. Like that's how they just, and they yeah. like kick it another year, kick the can another year, because his highs haven't quite been high enough. I think that you're just like, totally embrace it, and the lows have been pretty low. He really struggled last year. I know the injuries were there, but like he was not a good starting quarterback last year. But I don't think there's the we got to get rid of this guy vibes like they had with Wentz. Zach Kiefer, as we're taping, released this article just like how they had doubts about Wentz last summer because he couldn't take hard coaching and it just wasn't like fitting in that well in the locker room and stuff like that, and the accuracy and decision making. I don't think Baker's there. He's just in the middle.
And Baker that's hears everything. In the middle.
That's yeah. disappointing as for a yeah. number one pick, but it's also doable if you want to go make
Frank
a playoff.
Frank should have understood, you know, from a previous stop that Carson Wentz had coaching issues, but that's a whole different thing.
And yes, we credited the Colts for seeing their guy who had highs mixed in with lows and saying he's not our guy, let's get rid of him. And we credited him for that. The Browns went the other direction here, and they're saying we're going to stick with him and see how it plays out. And I you can make a case for both, because if, for instance, you use the Jimmy G connection again, if the Colts end up with Jimmy G and I guess a extra draft pick or two, they're still kind of in the same place. The Browns, at least, this is their homegrown guy. This is their number one pick.
On a rookie deal.
On a rookie deal for yeah. one more year. You see kind of what you have, and then you know whether or not for sure after this season. Or you don't. Or he's kind of the same thing he's been, where there's some highs and lows, but he's got to stay healthy,
and
too.
Everyone wants to stay employed. It's so tantalizing, because if they had had the 2021 Browns defense with the way the offense was playing in 2020 when they made the playoffs, like, they could have won another playoff game. Like, they were in the mix. They were an effective offense. Mayfield, I think, like a Kirk Cousins, has shown at the very least he can be the what do they call it? Like, kind of the guy who's just driving the car. You know, he's not going
to bus driver.
Yeah, he can keep them on the tracks driver. With a nice little running game and defense. They can make the playoffs, keep everyone employed.
Pretty good seg. Now, you could say...
You are basking in it. I mean, I enjoyed it, too.
I thought it was a good conversation. Tony was great. Greg was excited. Mark wore a suit jacket today because he was so
right.
excited.
The song, I think, is the highlight, though, to me. So thank you, Sydney Carlson.
The legend, Sydney.
Hope you're enjoying your first few months of marriage, like Carson Wentz was back in
the
day.
I mean, Sydney is a classy young woman, and I can tell you she will not be dropping the breadcrumbs that seemingly everyone else does now.
No.
It's like, we get it. You're in
but
a
who knows?
Physical
we
relationship.
She married what I think you would qualify as a hottie, too. I mean, he's
we don't know
statuesque
him. We don't
man.
Know him. Maybe he's dropping on his knee like Russell Wilson and asking an important question. You know, would you like to start having some babies? All right, I should stop. Let's take that out. Let's take that out.
Don't take
don't
it out.
Take
I'm
it
leaving
out.
That in. That's
staying right
women's
in
month.
There.
Yes. Yeah, leave it. Women's month and everything, Greg. That's staying in.
That's something that women are skilled at.
But the thing with the Russell Wilson that continues to...
That was worse than anything
yeah,
I said.
What the What?
That is something that women are good at. Mark,
I said
are
skilled
way
at.
Worse.
Yeah, but that's...
That,
come
no,
on, bro.
Just leave that in, too.
Yeah, it's staying.
Now I'm the only one that's getting off scot-free.
Well, pointing out a positive aspect of the makeup.
Yeah, what...
What the person's so available,
digging,
able
he's
to do.
He's digging that hole and he's jumping in.
Hit the music.
Oh, my God.
No, my point was that when Russell Wilson goes on the Ellen show and drops down on a knee, he's not talking about He doesn't want to make his family bigger. He just wants everybody to know.
Right, which we get it. We get it. You're not in ninth grade.
Well, I think he really, their family is, it is quite large. The, you know, they have been popping out those babies.
Mr. Unlimited.
By the way, the biggest takeaway, and again, why unfortunately Flashpoint goes back in on ice for the foreseeable future, but it's like one of those series where it's, you know how Wes used to always talk about Northern Exposure. Northern Exposure, that was his show. To me, in this podcast, Flashpoint is my Northern Exposure. I can't wait. I hope it gets exhumed down the line because obviously it sparks a lot of positive things. Like Tony Grossi, a well-known decorated beat man, lighting up Mark like a Christmas tree. Let's listen back.
Well, that's a great point, Mark. Great point, Mark. Great point, Mark. That's a great point, Mark. Great point, Mark, that I think is very underplayed nationally.
That means a lot to Mark to hear that from you.
That sound drop, I appreciate.
Just think, you know, was Tony Grossi covering the Browns when you were writing those letters to the Belichick? Who knew? You know, young Mark Sessler could have never imagined.
He was.
Tony, I believe he was there.
Tony
then
hadn't even finished his thought, and I said to Ricky, we got to get that clip because that will make Mark's day. And then what did Graver do? He goes upstairs, he cuts it, he runs it back down, and now Mark, there you go. That was special.
A special work by Erica and Gravedigger. And I appreciate not only you on National Women's Week, Erica, but also Gravedigger during Not National Man's Week.
Do you want to hear it again one more time?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's a great point, Mark. Great point, Mark. Great point, Mark. That's a great point, Mark. Great point, Mark.
This one could have legs.
Very underplayed nationally.
That means a lot to Mark to hear that from you.
I would Easter egg that as like a 90-second loop or 90-minute loop after the show. Just
right,
let
but
it
then,
play out.
Then I play one little sound drop and it sends you off the complete rails.
Yeah,
and
what was up with that earlier today,
I said,
Mark?
Oh, yeah, just because you said a man was durable and it was funny. And instead of you going on with your point, you're like, oh, yeah, got it. I'm done.
I bring to you in this show my real personality the best I can. And I was agitated.
I appreciate it. I appreciate your honesty.
He's living in the moment.
I also appreciate you guys, you know, on International Women's Month, asking everybody about their pop culture things and skipping over the one woman on this show.
I was getting to you to close the show.
That's what he's
doing. You're going to circle back.
In addition to all the other stuff that Mark said like 5 minutes ago, he tried to narrow it down to National Women's Week.
Week.
Yeah. I actually thought that it was a day, and I elongated it to a week.
Yeah.
International Women's Hour with Mark Sessler.
My intention
was 3 weeks for you.
No, my intention, well, it's just like any woman's birthday at this point in the 30s. Just celebrate it for an entire month.
If people want to hear, you recommend.
That felt oddly personal.
Wow.
Am I wrong?
Take the shovel out.
I thought we had ended the show roughly 12 minutes ago.
What does Women's Month mean to you? Just procreate for the month?
No, I think you celebrate.
That's what they're good at.
You celebrate the broad spectrum of their abilities and gifts and what they bring to the earth.
Well, anyone wanting to hear Erica's, you know, pop culture recommendations, you can hear it weekly on the Jessel, Nick, and Rosenthal Vanity Project.
That's true. So.
There you go. Does that count? Does that now two pop culture recommendations by you, Mark? Greg, you had the man that made you cry.
It's a whole team. It's a school for the deaf. I mean, you say it so condescending.
I'm not being condescending.
It's very much just a regular football team. It's called Audible.
Audible.
It's on Netflix. It's good. It got nominated for an Oscar.
Audible, number one. Gang of Youths, number two. Mark, you had...
Winning Time about the Lakers on HBO.
Number three. Then Greg comes off the second turnbuckle plugging his podcast. So
well,
JRVP number four.
You know, you could check out Erica Weekly, you know, recommending
right,
things.
But we know what you're really doing there. You're getting a plug in for yourself, and that's good. Throwback podcast
does that also
suggest
that Erica's been squeezed out of this part of the show?
No,
because
we're still waiting. We're still waiting. We're still waiting.
I wouldn't stand for that during this month.
We're
just
building
this
up.
Month. Thank you.
Well, I mean, just especially during this month.
This is your month to be treated equally, Erica.
Well, you're right.
You know,
you're
so lucky.
Thank you so much.
You could check out the Billboard Top 10 Hits of 1992, February 92. And we have a very special for the UK audience episode coming up this week on the Throwback Podcast. And finally, Erica, your recommendation in the pop culture realm.
Well, there's a lot going on right now, but I'm really into the After Party on, I think it's Apple TV
Plus.
And
oh,
it
yes.
is awesome. Every episode is a different genre and from a different person's perspective of a murder that happens, but it's a bunch of comedians. And it's like it's not laugh out loud funny, but it's very, very smart in the way that it's written. It's very funny, very sarcastic. If you're into that type of stuff, super into it right now.
What if I told you that my wife, who works for that
company,
my wife, who I didn't, I have not.
I didn't kill my wife.
To this point.
I don't care.
Works for that particular company.
No. Oh, yeah. Right.
And worked on that show.
Oh, my
God. So I'm glad you enjoy it.
Have you seen it?
Not yet. She's been trying to get me to see it.
During her month.
It's a point
it's
of contention.
I'm sure it's teed up in the household.
It's really great.
No,
it's...
with my wife, all 12 months.
Oh,
our International
that's so
Woman's
sweet.
Month.
That's so sweet.
That's how
Am
you
I
do
supposed
it, Mark.
To just say the same to look
well,
yes.
no,
shiny?
You have... You,
You're
you
a shiny
need to
boy,
look
Mark.
Anyway, you just be you. And
All right. Well,
it's time to end the show now.
It was like 5 minutes ago. Wait, she never get. Oh,
well,
wait,
that's
she did
a great point, Mark.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow with our third show and the ramp up to free agency. We'll be talking the state of the Seahawks, the latest news, and anything else that crosses our way. Remember, the TV show is back from its own hiatus on Friday on NFL Network. So check that out. And that's it. All right, that's all. Gravedigger's like, I have pop culture recommendations too. You got your Carol Landry conversation, Gravedigger. But thank you for getting that clip. Till Thursday, heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. Undercover Tourist.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.